Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and I'm reading today from the words of John Newton, his autobiography entitled Out of the Depths. John Newton, remember, the author of Amazing Grace, a slave trader saved by that grace. This was put out by Kriegel Publications in 2003. I'm in Chapter 5, Trials in West Africa. There is an important instruction in the words of our Lord, "Mine hour is not yet come," John 2:4. Now, the following 2 years, of which I now give some account, will seem as an absolute blank in a very short life. But as the Lord's hour of grace had not yet come, I was to have still deeper experiences of the dreadful state of the heart of man when left to itself. I have since frequently admired the mercy of the Lord in banishing me to those distant parts and almost excluding me from human society at a time when I was filled with sinfulness. Like one infected with a pestilence, I was capable of spreading a taint wherever I went. Had my affairs taken a different turn, had I succeeded in my plans and remained in England, my sad story would probably have been worse. I could hardly have been worse as a person, but my wickedness would have had greater scope. I might have been very hurtful to others and multiplied irreparable evils. But the Lord wisely placed me where I could do others little harm. The few I had to converse with were also much like myself, and I was soon brought into such abject circumstances that I was too low to have any influence. I was rather shunned and despised than imitated. Most persons, even among the blacks, thought themselves too good to speak to me during the first year of my residence among them. I was as yet an outcast lying in my blood, and to all appearance exposed to perish. But the Lord looked at me with mercy. He did not strike me down to hell as I justly deserved. He passed by me when I was in my blood and said to me, "Live," Ezekiel 16:6. The appointed time for the manifestation of his love that covered all my iniquities with the robe of his righteousness and admitted me to the privileges of his children was not until long afterwards. Yet he still urged me to live. I can only ascribe it to his secret upholding power that what I suffered in part of this time did not rob me either of my life or senses. Yet by these sufferings, the force of my evil example and inclination was lessened. I therefore have reason to count those sufferings as part of God's mercy to me. Let me give you a very brief sketch of the geography of the circuit to which I was now confined. I may have an occasion to refer to places that I shall now mention. My trade afterwards, when the Lord allowed me to see better days, was mainly to the same places with the same persons where and by whom I had been considered on a level with their lowest slaves. From Cape de Verde, the most western point of Africa, to Cape Mount, the whole coast is full of rivers. The principal ones are the Gambia, Rio Grande, Sierra Leone, and Cherbro. The former is well known, and I was never there, I need say nothing. Now, the Rio Grande, like the Nile, divides into many branches near the sea. On the most northerly, called Cacheo, the Portuguese have a settlement. The most southern branch, known by the name of Rio Nuna, is, or then was, the usual boundary of the white men's trade northward. Sierra Leone is a mountainous peninsula, uninhabited and inaccessible on account of the thick woods, except for those parts that lie near the water. The river is large and navigable. About 12 leagues to the southeast are three contiguous islands called the Bananas, about 20 miles in circuit. This was about the center of the white men's residence. 7 leagues farther, the same way, lie the Plantains, three small islands about 2 miles distant from the continent at the point which forms one side of the Cherbro. This river is more properly a sound running within a long island and receiving the confluence of several large rivers, rivers unknown to song, but far more deeply engraved in my remembrance than the Po or the Tiber in Italy. The southernmost of these has a very peculiar course, almost parallel to the coast. It will seldom lead one more than 3 miles, and sometimes not more than half a mile from the seashore. Indeed, it may be that all these rivers may have communications with each other and with the sea in many places. Well, my new master had formerly resided near Cape Mount, but now he settled at the Plantains, upon the largest of the three islands. It's a low, sandy island, about 2 miles in circumference, and almost covered with palm trees. We immediately began to build a house and to begin trading for slaves. I had now some desire to make up for lost time and to exert diligence in the tasks before me. The master was a man with whom I might have lived tolerably well if he had not been soon influenced against me. He was much under the control of a black woman who lived with him as a wife. She was a person of some importance in her own country, and he owed his initial success to her influence. The woman, I know not why, was strangely prejudiced against me from the first. What made it still worse for me was a severe illness that attacked me very soon after arriving, before I had opportunity to show what I could or would do in his service. According to the endnote, by the way, she was known as P.I., the two letters P.I., and the phonetic spelling of her name. She was from the ruling Bombo clan, who was involved in slave trading with the white traders on the coast. Well, I was sick when he sailed to Rio Nuña, and he left me in the woman's hands. At first I was taken some care of, but since I did not recover quickly, she grew weary and entirely neglected me. I sometimes had difficulty in procuring a drink of cold water when burning with a fever. My bed was a mat spread over a board or chest, and a wood log was my pillow. When my fever left me and my appetite returned, I would gladly have eaten, but no one gave me anything. She lived in plenty herself, but hardly allowed me sufficient food to sustain life. Now and then, when in the highest good humor, she would send me food from her own plate after she had dined. So greatly was my pride humbled, I received this with thanks and eagerness, as the most needy beggar receives alms. Once, I well remember, I was called to receive this bounty from her own hand, but being exceedingly weak and feeble, I dropped the plate. Now, those who live in plenty can hardly conceive how this loss touched me, but she had the cruelty to laugh at my disappointment. Though the table was covered with dishes, she lived mostly in the European manner, she refused to give me any more. My hunger was at times so great as to compel me to go at night and pull up roots in the plantation at the risk of being punished as a thief. These I have eaten raw upon the spot for fear of discovery. These roots are a very wholesome food when boiled or roasted, but are as unfit to be eaten raw in any quantity, much like a potato. Sometimes strangers, even slaves in chains, helped me by secretly bringing me provisions, for they dared not be seen, from their own slender pittance. Next to urgent hunger, nothing sits harder upon the mind than scorn and contempt. Of this I had an abundant measure. When I was very slowly recovering, this woman would sometimes pay me a visit, and not to pity or relieve me, but to insult me. She would call me worthless and indolent and compel me to walk, which I could hardly do. She would then send her attendants to mimic my motion, to clap their hands, laugh, and throw limes at me. If they chose to throw stones, as was the case once or twice, they were not rebuked. Although all who depended on her favor had to join her in this treatment, yet when she was out of sight, I was rather pitied than scorned by the lowest of her slaves. At last my master returned from his voyage. I complained of mistreatment, but he would not believe me. Since I did it in her hearing, I fared no better for it. On his second voyage, however, he took me with him. We did pretty well for a while until a fellow trader he met on the river persuaded him that I was unfaithful, that I stole his goods in the night or when he was on shore. This was almost the only vice I could not be justly charged with. The only remains of a good education I could boast of was what is commonly called honesty. As far as he had trusted me, I had been always faithful. Although my great distress might in some measure have excused it, I never once thought of defrauding him in the smallest matter. However, the charge was believed, and I was condemned without evidence. From that time, he likewise abused me in most cases. Whenever he left the vessel, I was locked upon deck with a pint of rice for my day's allowance. If he stayed longer, I had no relief until his return. Indeed, I believe I would have been nearly starved but for the opportunity to catch fish sometimes. When fowls were killed for his own use, I seldom was allowed any part but the entrails to bait my hooks. At what we call slack water, that is, about the changing of the tides when the current was still, I would generally fish, and I very often succeeded. If I saw a fish upon my hook, my joy was little less than another person may have found in the success of the scheme he had most at heart. Such a fish, hastily broiled, or rather half-burned, without sauce, salt, or bread, as many times provided me a delicious meal. If I caught none, I might, if I could, sleep away my hunger until the return of slack water, and then try again. I also suffered from the inclemency of the weather and the lack of clothes. The rainy season was now advancing. My clothing was a shirt, a pair of trousers, a cotton handkerchief instead of a cap, and a cotton cloth about 2 yards long for upper garments. Thus dressed, I have been exposed for 20, 30, perhaps nearly 40 hours altogether in incessant rains, accompanied with strong gales of wind and without the least shelter when my master was on shore. I still feel some faint pangs of the violent pains I then contracted. The excessive cold and wet I endured in that voyage, and so soon after I had recovered from a long sickness, quite broke my constitution and my spirits. The latter were soon restored, but the effects of the former still remain with me, as a needful memento of the service and wages of sin. In about 2 months we returned. The rest of the time I remained with him was chiefly spent at the plantains under the same regimen as I have already mentioned. My haughty heart was now brought down, not to a wholesome repentance, nor to the language of the prodigal son, this was far from me, but my spirits were sunk. I had lost all my tough determination and almost my own sense of self. Gone was the fierceness that fired me on board the Harwich, and that made me capable of the most desperate actions. But I was no further changed than a tiger tamed by hunger. Remove the occasion, and he will be as wild as ever. One thing, though strange, is true. Though destitute of food and clothing, depressed to a degree beyond common wretchedness, I could sometimes concentrate my mind upon mathematical studies. I had bought Barrow's Euclid at Plymouth. It was the only volume I brought on shore. It was always with me, and I used to take it to remote corners of the island by the seaside and draw my diagrams with a long stick upon the sand. Thus I often beguiled my sorrows and almost forgot my feelings. Without any other assistance, I made myself, in a good measure, master of the first 6 books of Euclid. And that is a strange way to end the chapter, but that's where it ends. Next time, chapter 6, a new master. Thank you for listening, and please do look around at my site. We have over 3,000 audios here featuring some of the church's great preachers. Persecution stories from North Korea in English and Korean, Bible studies on a number of subjects, a blog, and a store where you could purchase one of my books. If you desire more fellowship, please consider visiting my YouTube channel known as Pasturelands, or contact me at bob.j.faulkner.72@gmail.com, and I'll share details of our street ministry, our Saturday evening Zoom meeting for men, or Tuesday noon meeting for families, for anyone that wants to come. Well, this is the Hackberry House of Chosun. It is, as you are hearing it for the first time, May the 7th, 2022. Lord willing, we'll get to talk again real soon. Bye-bye.